if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 149. This is our 2021 Waste Management Phoenix Open and Saudi International episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's European and PGA Tour action. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How's things?
Chipper, mate. Chipper.
You? Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Thank you.
I've come on the podcast for a rest. I know that you're exactly the same.
A rest from the homeschooling.
A rest from life in general, really. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our well-famous Golf Betting System website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media, on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. Paul, I am starting a Get Paul to 10,000 Followers campaign this week.
It's so close.
Please follow Paul at Golf Betting. You've
perhaps
been in the 9,000.
Perhaps if I got a win, Steve. Perhaps if I got a win, that might actually
well, if you pick someone that could putt, it would help.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Exactly. So let's follow Paul at Golf Betting. Let's get him to 10,000 followers. You've been in that now 9,000 range now for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You have, haven't you?
Yeah, nearly there. 9,600 and something.
Oh, I know. I'm available at Bamford Golf on Twitter. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. I think I let in another 4 or 5 this morning. Got a constant flow of new visitors. A lot of Patrick Reed chat at the weekend. Interesting. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I have just 10 minutes ago released the Waste Management Phoenix Open Golf Betting Show. It's about half an hour, and I literally go into some real minute detail about the agronomy of the course, winning scores, skill sets, everything that you need to know. More detail there than I can put into the podcast half an hour. So check out our YouTube channel, Steve Bamford Golf. Right, as I say every week, and Paul, we're getting a really good flow at the moment. Thank you to each and every one of you. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. We broke through the 100 review mark in the United States last week. So thank you to you guys for delivering that. I suppose it does set the challenge, though, to those of us in Great Britain. I think we're sitting at 92, 94 reviews, something like that. So if you're in the UK, please give us a 5-star review. And let's break through that 100 barrier as quickly as we can. And for those of you in Ireland, I know it's a lot smaller country, there's some really good reviews in Ireland. So let's keep those coming as well. Okay. This one, first one, Great Golf Pod is the title. 5 stars. It is from Shark Boy Golf, and he is in California. Not a bad spot. Love listening to this podcast. If you like golf, this is a listen. Steve, Paul and Barry know what they are talking about. They give out solid golf information / picks. Always get a crack up at the Michael Caine voice and Paul's first round leader bets. Great call on Malnati. Solid stuff. Keep up the good work. Cheers, guys, from Shark Boy in Cali.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
And second review. Awesome content. You're going to like this one, Paul. 5 stars. I've been following GBS for a number of years now. and the level of detail and enjoyment listening always increases. The podcast makes me my drive home from work on a Tuesday very enjoyable. I don't even care if I'm stuck in traffic. That's true, you know. I listen to most of my podcasts if I'm out running or cycling or driving. Yeah. So yeah, I'm with. This is from Paul in Brighton. I'm with Paul on that one. The amount of stats and tools you have at your disposal to narrow down a large group of players is second to none. Even though I don't always follow Paul. To be fair, you cannot blame the bloke for that, can you?
No. Each to their own. I ultimately, we give people the info, give them the tools on the website, and half of the fun's making your own decisions, your own picks. So if you don't agree, then no, that's fine.
This idea that you have to follow a tipster and literally you read what on your phone and bang a bet on straight away. I think golf betting, and we've always said this, it's about giving people access to information and statistics where they basically make their own decisions, yeah?
Mm, absolutely.
That was Paul in Brighton. Another nice spot, Brighton. Yes. So,
thanks to both you guys for your taking the time out to review us this week. Much appreciated as ever.
Keep them coming. I will constantly monitor them, and we will go through them at the start of each and every show. We appreciate every single 5-star review. Right, I suppose we should talk about last week. We won't talk about Patrick Reed just yet. We'll talk about Sergio Garcia and his putting. I'll leave it. Yeah, the floor's yours, Paul. You did make me laugh. You did make me laugh at like 5:15 yesterday morning when you were telling me on Skype that Sergio Garcia couldn't putt. It did make me titter. It's like, really?
No shit, Paul.
Yeah, no shit.
He's just realised. Yeah, his long game, some of his driving was absolutely incredible. Yeah. And there's proper highlights reel of his driving on the week, and he's smashing it long, he's hitting it very accurately for the most part. From tee to green, well, I say tee to green because some of the irons weren't the best, but ultimately he could have won the golf tournament. It was simple as that. Had he putted even half decently, and he's got this style, hasn't he, where he's putting with his eyes closed, but. I wasn't really expecting him to be lining up after shots with his eyes closed too, because that's what it seemed like with some of the misses. It was just painful to watch at times, and frustrating when you've got a player who's that close to being seriously in contention and with a serious chance of winning. And it must be frustrating for him as well, because he's searched for years, hasn't he, for the solution, for the holy grail as to what he's going to do to solve his putting, because if he sorts that out, then had he sorted that out at some point in the past, it would be absolutely, absolutely flying. But yeah, not to be. Until I see something different in terms of those putting performances, I can't back Sergio again. There's a lot of people who on my timeline again have been saying to me, "Well, aren't you on him again this week?" And he finished tied sixth last week. That's good, but I can't go there. It's too masochistic for me, I think. But yeah, that's the way it is. Tied for six in the end. I could have got eight places had I relinquished a few points at the start of the week. But being greedy, I went for the price rather than the additional places. So
yeah, you're a price guy, aren't you? I'll often shave off 5 points and take the extra places, but it's just personal preference.
Yeah. Kind of bit me on the backside last week as a result. But
We said last week, Francesco Molinari, we said Paul Casey, we said Sergio Garcia. These guys and players of their ilk will have to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And Casey has now placed himself into the 9 players that are currently sitting in the automatic spots on Team Europe.
Yeah. And you can't begrudge him that because... I don't know if you saw his interview afterwards, but very emotional, very, very raw. You can't help but kind of pull for the guy. He's one of the good guys, I guess, in terms of world golf and European golf. That's his 15th European tour win. So, very impressive career overall. And the signs were there. I mean, if you look back at his Amex performance from the week before, second for strokes going tee to green, fourth for strokes going approach. And Dubai's never been about the best putter. There's been some pretty average putters who've got over the line in Dubai over the years. And that's kind of when I went, how I went down the Sergio route. But Casey's tee to green game was good, and he putted adequately, and that was enough. 16, nearly 17 strokes gained tee to green for Casey on the week, which is a pretty strong performance, and shows you where he made his numbers.
Fleetwood, Hatton, Rahm, McIlroy with world points. That's European. Then we've got Perez now, Paul Casey, Danny Willett, Matthew Fitzpatrick and Bernd Wiesberger. Lee Westwood has been just shuffled out of those nine spots.
Yeah.
And Robert McIntyre is in the spot beneath Lee Westwood with that good performance last week.
Yeah. Plenty of time to go, and there's going to be a lot of shuffling them about. But I'd expect, you know, even the likes of Westy, you know, he's in some good overall form, isn't he? And he'll be very motivated to continue that for the next 6-8 months or so, and see if he can get to the team.
You've got Francesco now as well with two consecutive PGA Tour top tens.
There's a spark there, and I know you supported him last week, and he just missed out on the place.
My rationale was right, though, wasn't it? I said he might be able to creep in, get an each way spot. He's one shot shy.
Yeah. No, it was a good. You know, overall, it was a good, good thought process with that. At a tasty price for Molinari, given the, you could look at his form outside of that most recent top ten and kind of dismiss him on that basis. But that was good. And Ryan Palmer, Barry and I are sitting there with our humble pie ready to eat, and whilst we haven't quite had to tuck in, it was still a nice result for Palmer in the end for you.
I think the key with Palmer was he'd shot the joint best score on Thursday on the South Course, and if he'd have gone out and ripped another score at the North Course, that'd have been the worst possible outcome. No, I'm being serious.
When you've
got Ryan Palmer leading at halfway by 2, 3, 4 shots, there's only one thing that's ever going to happen. And he didn't. He just nudged round a 2-under, was never in like the final group on Saturday. And from that point, he just stayed in the slipstream. And that's how you get an each-way 60-to-1 place out of him. If he'd have literally hit the front, you'd have ended up with nothing. Mm-hmm. That's just Ryan Palmer.
Yeah, I agree. And
it's luck, shows mate. You that... A lot of this is golf, it's luck.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to deliberately hold himself back on a Friday and a Saturday to kind of overcome that. But, from a punting perspective, if you see him in that kind of slipstream position, as you described, then you're far more comfortable than looking at the top of the leaderboard and expecting the inevitable collapse. Because that's when he falls out of the each-way places completely and you don't get a bean back, which is the frustration.
The one that slightly surprised me of my bunch was Scott, because I thought once Scott really got into the heat of the battle, he'd hang around.
Yeah.
But his tee to green game's absolutely... Well, sorry, his driving and his approach play was awful. It was literally his scrambling and putting that was keeping him in it. Which is atypical of Adam Scott, but it was very typical of the winner, Patrick Reed. And we did say, and that's what I love about Torrey Pines, strokes gain models and forecasts and all this kind of malarkey will not generate Patrick Reed winning that golf tournament, because in the build-up he'd been awful. Patchy. But there was always something good in his game. Even when he missed the cut, I think he fired in on the opening day a decent score, and then he just blew out on the Friday at the American Express. So there was something flashing and peaking. The thing that put me off Reed was the price, because as we've always said on this pod, I like Patrick Reed at 50-1, 60-1, 66-1. 25-1, it's not something I like in terms of his winning odds. When I went back in the history, the only tournament he's ever won at a shorter odds than 25-1 was 22-1 when he won the the Tournament of Champions in a 34-man field.
Yeah, it's a restricted field, isn't it? So
what? That's a 40-45 to 1 price point.
Yeah, and I guess that price was born more of his performance. Did he finish third the previous year, something like that? Had that been a missed cut off the back of a missed cut on his previous start, you probably would have got that 40-1 price point, which you could take a chance on him at that point. There was plenty, going back to the Earth Course in Dubai at the back end of last year, there was plenty to like about Reed, particularly with his short game and his putting. You know, it was like Houdini that week. And some of the saves last week again from Reed, you know, notwithstanding the issues that have been well documented, but his short game and his putting and his chipping and his wedge play is incredible. If he had a consistent long game and a consistent approach game, the guy would be absolutely incredible. He'd be winning even more tournaments than he does win already.
He's rebuilt his swing. And he was. I read the interview after Thursday. He can now move the ball both ways. He's got different shot shapes, and he feels just. Yeah. And you can see in his driving, he actually hit a lot of fairways last week, and he has been peaking for a while. Because I mean, I put him up at the US Open, and that's because he was driving the ball so well at the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So it's been percolating for a while, and we said on last week's podcast, because it's a classical golf course, different players can win. So it can be a tee to green game, metronome one year, and then the next year it's a Branch Snedeker, it's a Patrick Reed, who from 100 yards and in, with a wedge, with the scrambling and with the putting, can just, can win on that particular week.
Yeah.
And it was a Reed sort this year. It's very easy, isn't it? And I do this a lot, to get sucked into this, you have to have a tee to green player, a ball striker that you get lucky with a putter that particular week. Reed's the extreme of that, isn't he? You're very rarely going to see that tee to green excellence. But you said to me the other day, from 100 yards and in, the guy is absolutely lethal.
It's mad, isn't it? Because you eyeball those performances and those approach shots, and you think, wow. And then you look at his greens and regulation stats, the raw stat, and he's always way, way, way down the list. So it's got to be the longer irons that are just the thing that he needs to sharpen up, because those wedges, those, the gap wedges or the full wedges, are just outstanding.
And his scrambling and putting game, he's got to be, at the moment, probably the best in the world around the greens and on the greens.
Yeah. He's going to divide opinion. He's going to have, as you said, there was so many comments and views on him as a person, as a player and as a person over the weekend. And that's understandable given everything that, and all the noise that surrounds Patrick Reed whenever there's any kind of controversy. But you can't take it away from the guy that, firstly, he can close a golf tournament. And secondly, his short game is, as you said, it takes some beating.
I think that was his 9th PGA Tour victory. And I'm desperately looking at my spreadsheet while I'm not killing time particularly effectively. That's right. His 9th PGA Tour victory. He's landed 2 on bent grass, 4 on Bermuda grass, and that was his 3rd on Poana. 2016 winner at Bethpage. We mentioned Bethpage Black as a great correlatory course. And you were on him last year in Mexico on those Poana greens at altitude there in Mexico City. So, yeah, it's one of those you look at it and go, well, actually, it was someone we could have picked, but I wasn't getting involved at 25-1 on Patrick Reed. But I know quite a few people were, and well played to those guys.
Yeah, always easy to post-rationalise afterwards, isn't it? That's the game.
Reed has now eked himself into the automatic 6 spots for Team America. DJ at 1, DeChambeau 2, JT at 3, Xander at 4, Colin Morikawa at 5 and Reed at 6. He's knocked Koepka out of there. So Koepka, Simpson, Finau, English and Cantlay are the 5 beneath those automatic spots. That's going to be a real firefight, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
The players will be thinking to themselves, well, if I'm going to get myself into like position 7 and 9, I'm going to get a pick. So interesting the way that the Team America are sorting that one out with Steve Stricker. It's interesting as well, Steve Stricker and Paddy Harrington all of a sudden are starting to play some half-decent golf, haven't they? Harrington's playing some really nice stuff, and he's in Phoenix this week, of all places.
I don't know if you've seen on Twitter and on Instagram, he puts out a little short video on a Wednesday, usually, Harrington, just to say this, you know, his own personal preview of the week ahead. And he was very downbeat about his chances in Dubai, and, you know, wasn't hitting the ball cleanly. And he was, you know, they said, well, potentially you turn up on a Thursday and it's all right. But, you know, it wasn't the typical kind of chipper Patrick Harrington. And then turned up and he finished, what, in the tie for sixth. You're like, wow. So clearly you did find something when you stepped onto the first tee on Thursday. And as you say, yeah, they're finding a bit of form, which isn't always the way with the Ryder Cup captains, is it? You often find them fall completely off the charts as they're focusing on the bigger task at hand.
We've been chatting for 20 minutes, which is bang out of order, really. Apologies to the listeners. Let's start then with Saudi International, which at 56, a ranking of 56, is it, for the world official world golf ranking point?
58, yeah.
That's incredible. This must be the best field on the European Tour this year.
Yeah, it's I can't remember one that a regular European Tour event that is as loaded as this. Even the likes of the Scottish Open, when you've got players coming over to warm up for the Open Championship, it's mad. We'll go through the field in a second because it's a different class, really. Final leg of our 3-week Middle East swing. We're coming back to Qatar. For another trip into the region after the WGC concession later in the month, but for now that's going to be the end of our initial Middle East swing. $3.5 million prize fund this week. Comparable to last week, far less than the Abu Dhabi Championship, but there are some substantial appearance fees, as there have been for the last two renewals, to get some of the best players in the world. Yeah. To attend. So, yeah.
They're handing out a fortune.
So, yeah, as you say, they wave a few dollars at some of the players. And
The name that made me really chuckle was Phil Mickelson. He'll be there having a chat with some of the guys. Oh, do you fancy this, what did they call it? This Saudi Premier League, guys.
Yeah. Phil played last year, which...
I bet.
Off the back of absolutely no form and finishing the tie for third. I think it was a three-figure price last year as well.
Wow,
which was mad.
Really?
Yeah, because you're coming in off absolutely nothing finishing the tie for third. But yeah, as you said, in terms of the field strength, the strength of field officially is 4-4-1. And 394. Put it into context, last week's Farmers was 4-4-1, which you'd have expected to be far, far stronger. And it was only marginally stronger. The world ranking points to the winner, 54 this week and 58 to the Farmers last week. So yes, it's, you know, in terms of the relative strength, it's right up there with a top end PGA Tour event. And 20 of the world's top 50 are here, which puts it into some kind of context, really.
Great.
Dustin Johnson, the 5-1 favourite, he's been backed in. Bryson's been absolutely hammered in the last day or so since the odds first came out. He's down from 9-1 down to general 8-1 or shorter now as well. Till Hatton, 12-1. Patrick Reed, 14-1, last week's winner. Tony Finau, 16-1, and Hovland, 16-1, Tommy Fleetwood, 22-1. Tommy Fleetwood in a regular European Tour event, generally that kind of 12-14-1 price point. So 22-1 this week puts it into context where his position is relative to the players in this field. Paul Casey, last week's winner, 22-1. Sergio's drifted out a little bit, 28-1. But as I say, there's plenty of backers for Sergio this week. Abraham Anser, 33s. Bobby McIntyre, who had another cracking chance last week, didn't he? 33-1. 40-1 by those players. But you've still got the likes of Christian Bezuidenhout, Matt Wallace, Shane Lowry, Andy Sullivan, Jason Kokrak. the list goes on. As you said, you know, further down, Phil Mickelson, there's a lot of very good players in this week's field. And as I said a second ago, 20 of the world's current top 50 are playing here this week.
Kevin Na, you haven't even mentioned Justin Rose.
Yeah. I mean,
Justin Rose at 60-1.
Mm.
Wow. What's the key then on this? It's a coastal track, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it's only the third renewal we've had of this. So of the two we've had so far, Dustin Johnson won the first one back in 2019 at 10-1. He was 19 under in total. Graham McDowell won last year. He was 90-1 coming into this.
Mm.
12 under, so it was a little bit of a tougher, a bit windier last year.
It blew, didn't it?
Yeah, and... As you said, a coastal track, which generally that's the one thing that kind of protects these coastal tracks. Other than that, if there's no wind about, then often you can make a pretty decent score.
Mm.
It's a short track, 7,010 yards, par 70. For the members, it's 72, but they do make it a par 70 for the pros. But even so, it's a tickle over 7,000 yards, so it's not long by any stretch. It's built around four lakes and some of the holes alongside the Red Sea as well. So you've got a lot of water in play, a few dog legs. But as ever, as I said a second ago, the only real defence for a track like this is the wind. So it's interesting to see that we are going to see a bit of wind this week. Up to about 20 miles an hour on Thursday, probably gusting a little bit stronger than that, 20, 25 maybe, and 10 to 15 miles an hour thereafter. So there's going to be some decisions to be made in terms of shot selection and how individual holes are played and club selection, of course, in the wind. But that adds another dimension to it, which is good. We don't want to see a birdie fest on these kind of tracks each and every week. So that's positive. Paspalum grass throughout the whole track is the whole track's been laid to Paspalum Royal Dynasty for reference. But from the tees, the fairways, the rough, and also the greens themselves are all Paspalum this week. So that's one aspect to kind of grab onto, I guess. The coastal element, the shore element. Some players play better on par 70s where there's fewer par 5s and less advantage potentially to the Bombers. Although, you know, if you look back at the stats, and it's a little bit frustrating because if you look at the stats for this week, there's absolutely no stats historically for Dustin Johnson for his two efforts here. And he finished first and second. There's no stats for Phil Mickelson either last year and he finished third. And often you get that with the European Tour. If you've got an American player comes over, a PGA Tour player comes over, they just don't track him. And simple as that. So
well, they seem to have stopped that this year, haven't they? Because there were numbers last week for Morikawa and there were numbers for Justin Thomas at Abu Dhabi. So if you have actually stopped that European Tour and you are giving us full visual statistics for some of the biggest names in world golf, well done.
Yeah, a positive step forward. In this shots gained era, then that makes perfect sense just to fill those final gaps in. But yeah, historically, you haven't got those. I mean, you'll have to infer how DJ played on his two performances, and you can infer how Phil Mickelson may have played. But when you look through those performances, and also those of the players who were recorded, you know, in truth, there was a real mix there. I mean, Dustin Johnson's clearly one of the longest players in the world. Graham McDowell is, on the other hand, a much shorter player from tee to green, and he's going to generally appeal to a different style of track. Gavin Green finished well last year. He got to his position by playing very strong from tee to green. Thomas Peters was also, I think, in a tie for third last year, and he hit far less than 50% of fairways. So, lots of ways to get round this track, by the looks of it. Drawing conclusions between Dustin Johnson and Graham McDowell, the only obvious one, and Phil Mickelson as well, having finished third, the only obvious one that's there staring you in the face is Pebble Beach. DJ's got a fantastic record around Pebble. Graham McDowell won there, didn't he, in the US Open back in, was it 2010, I'm going to say? Lefty's won, what's he won, five times around Pebble, something like that. There's a lot of Pebble Beach correlating form. Not that you're going to find a great deal of players in this field who you can really map that across to, but again, when you look at the fact that Pebble's a coastal track, it's a short track, again, it makes sense that you've got that kind of correlation there. So So yeah, worth having a look if you're digging a little deeper into your stats this week. The par fours are key here. It's a par 70, so you've only got 8 looks at par fives. So generally, you're going to have to score well around the par fours. That said, DJ last year, he finished in second. He was 9 under for those 8 looks at the par fives during the course of the week. So he really did make a decent score on those par fives every time he had a chance to do so. So the only other thing that really draws all of the top performers from the last 2 years together is incoming form. So 9 of the 10 players who finished inside the top 5 from 2019 and 2020, each one of them, so that's 9 out of 10, had a top 10 finish in one of the last 6 starts. The only one who breaks that mould is Phil Mickelson. As I said last year, he wasn't fancied whatsoever, really, given the name, and managed to finish in the tie for 3rd. I think he was 100-1. I think it was something mad like that. So yeah, a bit of incoming form. Decent par 4 scoring, coastal track, Paspalum as well. There's plenty of Paspalum tracks dotted around the world. So you can look at some of those over on the PGA Tour. Puerto Rico's one, Mayakoba's yep. another.
Yeah.
Over on the European Tour, you've got Oman, you've got Mauritius. There's a few to dig into. And if you go through my preview, there's a few of the different tracks mentioned at various points which may be of use for your analysis. Kuala Lumpur is another one which has been played both on the European and the PGA Tour, the CIMB Classic over the years as well. So yeah, a bit of Paspalum form could be a positive. And of course, with a little bit of wind in the forecast too, then a player who can handle that is going to be a favoured angle, I think. So yeah, plenty to attack given we've only really got 2 years worth of data to investigate this week. I've gone through, again, you can make a case for any of the guys at the top end, really, couldn't you? And clearly they've been backed. I mean, DJ's been backed on the strength of his performances here over the last 2 years, and that's understandable at 5-1. You can understand why someone like Bryson's going to get supported on a short track that he could absolutely murder if he's playing well from tee to green. So there's cases to be made for those guys. Tyrrell Hatton, 12-1. You know, he's been playing some outstanding stuff for the last 6 months or so. He's been one of the real form players in the world, hasn't he? But for me, of the players at the top, the one I've gone for is Victor Hovland at 16-1. And to be honest, when I started doing my pre-analysis for this last week, he was at the top of my list, given how he's played comparable tracks, in my view, comparable tracks over the last year or so. And he nearly blew his price completely last week, didn't he, at Torrey Pines? He was right in the mix. You know, and you're kind of looking at this thinking, you know, nice to show some form, Victor, but please don't go and win.
Isn't it always the way?
Yeah.
I had Xander penciled in for this week in Phoenix, yeah, and you had Victor for this, and all of a sudden they're like tied for the lead. It's like, for Lord's sake, you're just destroying your odds for next week.
Yeah.
Always the way.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it was never going to be a particularly long price for this, but it certainly shaved a little bit off what I'd expect.
You might have got 20.
Yeah. In the field that we've got, 20s may have been out there, had he finished in a tie for 20th or thereabouts. But finished in a tie for 2nd, so 16s is all we're getting. But I don't think that takes or detracts from his chance whatsoever. I think he's showing that he's clearly in some great nick. 5th for strokes going approach, 7th for strokes going tee to green, 15th for strokes going putting. It's only around the greens. It's only really around the greens that lets him down. We know that's his weakness. It's something
the putter's better, isn't it? And that's been his faux gras for a period of time, isn't it? The other thing with Victor that we know, he absolutely loves his Paspalum.
Absolutely, yeah. If you look at his 2 wins, both from Coastal, both from Paspalum, Puerto Rico and Mayakoba at the back end of last year. And that Mayakoba win's interesting because he came straight from there to the DP World Tour Championship the week after, making his debut, hadn't seen the course, and finished 3rd that week, making his debut there at the Earth course, which was really quite impressive, I think.
So he's made this transit before.
Yeah. And you
long know, distance transit, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you look at some of the comments and some of the mindset and you know, his mental approach to it, he just gets on with it. And I think for me, the real focus for him will be now to make sure that he makes it through to the Ryder Cup team. And he's talked again in the past about how that's such a big motivator for him. And after last week, he now sits at 13th in the standings, 12th in the world rankings. You'd expect him to be there, but he's going to have to make it by rights to absolutely guarantee his spot. So yeah, I think the motivation to win his first big, his first European Tour event is going to be a big motivator for them this week. The other point you've got is that Mike Hober win, Graham McDowell won Mike Hober too, didn't
yeah.
he? So you've got a clear link between those two tracks. So adding it all together, 16-1 on Victor was my pick of the guys at the very top. I'm backing that up with Kevin Na, 66-1. I thought it was a great price on Kevin Na, to be honest. And we talked about Na on the pod a week or two ago, didn't we, after his Sony win. And you've got to pick him on the weeks that really suit. And, a short par 70 has got to be right in his wheelhouse. And I don't think there's enough respect being given to Kevin Na here this week. He's 22nd in the world. He's the 9th best ranked player in this field. But he's kind of down in the, way below the second tier in terms of the betting this week. So, yeah, happy to take a chance on him. That recent win, that Sony win, was his 5th PGA Tour win. He's 3rd in less than 2 years. And there's times in the past when he was a bit of a laughing stock. And, again, I'm not going to go over what we've already discussed in the pod, but he's moved on massively since that point. And he can get over the line. For all of those players, the ones that we sit there and bang our heads against a brick wall each week because they can't and don't get over the line, Kevin Na can win a golf tournament. And give him a sniff, and he gives himself a good chance. So, 66 is happy to take that on. He's got a bit of form, some relevant form at El Chameleon, second and third also at Kuala Lumpur on the Paspalum Greens. There, couple of top 5 finishes if you're looking for Pebble Beach form too. So, there's plenty to like about Kevin Na.
He doesn't pop strokes gain models, mate, so they give you a half decent price. And the thing with Na is you do get a very low, he's like Matthew Wolf, you get an extremely low floor where it's, why did I put him up, because he's in last place, it's embarrassing. But it's difficult to say it with Wolf, but with Na, right short course specialist when it comes to winning short course events, he can get the job done now. And actually, when he has on a rare foray overseas, he's played well overseas from the United States. If he actually produced something this week with this huge amount of ranking points and no pressure, that's going to be good if he's got any inclination about trying to get into any kind of Ryder Cup thinking.
I
can see motivation this week on Na.
Yeah, that point about him outside of the US, those CIMB Classic efforts, and again, correlating in terms of the grasses being used, both of those are interesting. Second and third, going back 5 or 6 years ago. So, I think there's plenty to like for a 66-1 shot, I must say. 3 longer prices to finish. I'll rattle through them relatively quick. Alex Levy, 125-1, one of my favourite players, as listeners will know, he's been a decent nick since lockdown, swinging freely again, which is really good to see. 7th at Cyprus, 6th at the Leopard Creek for the Alfred Dunhill, 9th last week in Dubai, where he's 3rd for strokes gain approach and 10th for strokes gain tee to green, which is a good indicator that he's playing some good stuff. 5th here on debut a couple of years ago, and that ace that he made in Abu Dhabi a couple of weeks ago, it's got to give him a little bit of impetus and encouragement. I think he won a BMW, I think, out of that shot as well. So no wonder that big beaming smile was back on his face. And I think there's more to come with Alex Levy. There's a lot of comments about him when he's playing, and a lot of fellow pros know that he's very, very close to getting back to his very, very best again. So 125-1, I'm happy to take a chance that it may be this week. Kirk Kitayama, I've backed at 150s. And similar to Hovland, actually, 2 relevant wins on 2 good comparable courses. He's one in Mauritius, he's one in Oman, the Oman Open in 2019. And you're talking coastal Paspalum tracks. And he clearly likes that style of golf. It's got some good high-level form as well. 3rd at the Italian Open back end of 2018, 2019. Lost in that playoff that Tyrrell Hatton won at the Turkish Open. And, again, if Tyrrell Hatton hadn't chipped, I think he chipped in on the first hole, didn't he? If he hadn't won, hadn't chipped in there, then potentially you've got a third win from Kurt Kitayama, and that was at Rolex Series level. So yeah, he's kind of stepping through the grades on the European Tour quite admirably. Last couple of starts, 35th in Abu Dhabi, 20th last week in Dubai, where he was 10th for greens in regulation. If he drives it well this week, then I think he's got a pretty good chance, 150-1, I must say. And finally, a longer shot even still, Kiridek Afibamre, I've gone with, 350-1. And the reason you're getting that price against a player who can win again and play against a player who's quite capable is that his incoming form reads withdrawn, miscut, 60th. So there's not a great deal to go with there. But he's better than that. We know he's far better than that. He was 11th at the Bermuda Championship over on the PGA Tour at the back end of last year. Should suit his game, this track, can play coastal golf, can play windy tracks. He's got Paspalum wins at the Kuala Lumpur, at Genzon as well for the Shenzhen International on the European Tour. And if he finds a bit of form with that putter, and when he does putt well, he's one of the very best out there, then he may make a complete mockery of that 350-1 if he can stick around. Actually showed up last week. He was fifth going through partway through the second round. So there was a flash of form there before he drifted away. So.
There's been a few little bits from him. Tiny bits.
So I'll just recap those then. Afibamre at 350. Kurt Kitayama 150-1. Alex Levy 125-1. Kevin Na 66, and Victor Hovland top of the shop 16-1 for me this week. Any fancies over in Saudi for you, Steve?
Abraham Ansah was my gut feel on this one.
Yes, can make a case for him.
He played here last year, didn't he?
There's a few of them that have come back and
finished sixth, backdoor sixth. That's not like Abraham Ansah, but. He started off position after round 133rd, and then he fired in a fantastic weekend to get a under the radar backdoor sixth, which is Ansah territory. He did exactly the same at the American Express, got all of his like 12-1 backers excited. Then he blew it up, and then comes and gets a backdoor top five finish.
So you want him sitting there in kind of 15th spot going into the final day and then just produce that 66 and get yourself in each way.
His only main tour victory, although it was Australian Open, wasn't it? He has won overseas. Yeah. I would not be surprised. I'm not even going to suggest that T4 Tony wins this, but it would be the kind of golf punter's misery that a player like Finau or Ansah, where you've been throwing stake after stake on the inevitable PGA Tour victory that's about to hit, then goes out to a European Tour event and actually wins.
Yeah. Well, with Finau, you've got that Puerto Rico link, haven't you? And again, Paspalum, Coastal coming to this, coming off form of, was he got incoming form of fourth, second?
Yeah.
He's going to have his backers, isn't he? Of course he is.
And he does play very, very well by the coast. Is there a lot of water in play this week, though?
Yeah.
T4 won't like that. That's not T4 territory water. So Ansah, just neat and tidy. He reminds me very much of a Graham McDowell.
Mm.
When McDowell is playing at his best with the fairways hit and the stocky approach play. Ansah is that kind of player. And I could see him winning this at 28-1. And everyone would kind of be slapping the middle of their foreheads going, I can't believe Ansah never wins on the PGA Tour. And he has the audacity to turn up here and win a star-studded event on the European Tour.
Yeah.
The other young player that I do like the look of this week is Rasmus Højgaard.
Oh, he was close for me as well. Showing a bit of little snippets of form, isn't he?
He is 86th in the world. So for a young, talented player like Højgaard, getting into the top 50 and doing a Victor Hovland is a short-term goal if he could achieve that. Now, a win in this absolutely loaded event would get Højgaard probably in the top 50 just in time for the WGC. I don't know how the WGC works in terms of European Tour, because 20 players from the European Tour get into this tournament that they're playing in Florida this year. Now, Højgaard might be on that list already, because clearly he had a half-decent year on the tour last year.
Yeah, maybe based on the race to Dubai final position.
Yeah, I think it'll be something like that. So he might actually be playing in Florida, but getting into the world top 50 anyway. But you can just see with Højgaard, something's percolating.
Yep.
Don't forget, this is a guy that in 2019 won the Mauritius Open.
Yeah.
On Paspalham Greens by the coast.
Coastal track, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I think your Kitayama tip's got some real legs in it as well. Because clearly he's another very talented player who likes this kind of setup. And then last year you had a situation where Højgaard went to Abu Dhabi, missed the cut. Went to Dubai, missed the cut. Came here to Saudi, missed the cut. Yeah. Month later, turns up at the Oman Open, another similar golf course, just up, you know, just around the coast in Oman, finished sixth.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he had that absolute tear on the UK tour, second, sixth, third, and won the UK Championship.
Yeah. Oh, he was absolutely on fire at that point, wasn't he? He seemed that kind of streaky kind of player, doesn't he? Once he finds a bit of form, that he can improve and hold it for a period of weeks. So to have seen him improving over the last couple of weeks is an interesting pointer, I must say.
Well, we went through 2020 and then this year, same set of tournaments. Abu Dhabi, 25th. He was 20th for tee to green that week. He then goes to Dubai, missed the cut last year, finished 9th, 7th for strokes gained off the tee, 31st tee to green, and that putter, 6th for strokes gained putting, 9th overall. I could see Højgaard having a good week and announcing him. People, you know, golf punters, regulars know of the guy now, know of the name. But for him to actually appear in a big tournament with some of the biggest names in world golf and be contending, that's kind of almost like a curtain opening moment in his career.
Yeah. What price is he?
I am seeing on Rasmus, he is 80-1 right now with Unibet. Or you can take additional places with 888 Sport, 8 places, 70-1.
As I say, it was close. It's one that will probably form part of my DK teams this week. So, I like that.
7-4 or something on
7,400 on DraftKings, wow. I'd
get stuck into that person.
Like that pick.
Well, it's a great tournament. There'll be excellent coverage on Sky TV over in the UK.
Very much looking forward to it.
We've got a comparable tournament over in, you think about it, pretty much apart from the odd Patrick Cantlay and a few very minimal world elite players, everyone's playing this week on different sides of the... Is Morikawa not playing this week?
No. He played last week, didn't he?
But, wow. So he flew out to Dubai. That's just weird.
It is an odd one, isn't it? Because you thought he'd hung around for both tournaments. But
there were two... I start thinking about the next week tournament, literally Tuesday afternoon, so this afternoon, after I've done all the work for the... The two players I had down for the Waste Management Phoenix Open for this week were Colin Morikawa and was also Joakim Niemann.
Yeah.
Guys that are just absolutely... iron straight and the best ball strikers around at the moment, and neither of them are playing in Phoenix.
Typical.
You do have to worry. I worry about scheduling some of these players, but anyway, we won't go down that route because I'm sure that their highly paid management teams know far more about it than I do. But I don't know where Neiman's going to turn up next. I mean, the guy's finished second and second. This Phoenix tournament would have suited him down to the ground. You'll probably find he turns up at Pebble Beach next week, which I wouldn't have thought suits him at all. But Waste Management Phoenix Open, TPC Scottsdale. This is the tournament clearly where you normally get 600,000 spectators drinking from 4 a.m. and having a good time.
I say, what a cracking atmosphere, isn't it?
I love this tournament. It's one of the, for me, it's probably one of the top five in the whole year. And I'm including majors. I love the Waste Management.
I know, it's on the bucket list, definitely.
It's a good course as well. It's one of those courses that isn't long, it's at altitude, and there's just so much risk and reward. So you can get players literally taking the course apart, 61, 62s, but you've got to be on it. Or if you're absolutely slashing it off the tee, all over the place with your approaches, you could be making 74s and 75s. It's one of those golf courses that separates the field very quickly.
Yep.
And the winners list is stellar. Absolutely stellar around here. Let's just talk with... We'll talk course and agronomy first. The actual course itself is relatively short, 7,200 yards. It's a par 71. There's three par fives. Six holes feature water. It amazed me, actually, that Tony Finau made a playoff last year with six holes featuring water, so he must have been bang on it. Of course he didn't win. That went to Webb Simpson. Now, and this is the other thing. You often... It would be very easy, and this was always in my mind, that you needed a banger here, a serious driving distance bomber. But then you look through regular performers here, Kuchar. Your friend and the podcast friend, Cesarevi, two runner-up positions here. And then, to top it off, Webb Simpson goes and wins it last year. There's also, going back to 2011, Mark Wilson. No, he's no bomber, is he?
No.
What these guys are, Kuchar, Simpson. I mean, Simpson's numbers going into this last year were off the charts. He was just... basically topping everything.
Yeah, he just wasn't fancied, was he?
Because you and I would have sat here with Barry going 14-1 on Webb Simpson. There's no way I'm backing that. He hasn't won for 2 years. Yeah. And what does he go and do? He goes and beats T4 Tony in a playoff. Yeah. And this is the point, I think. For me, this golf course is very, very simple to understand. It's all about relatively straight driving. Doesn't have to be long. It's all about second shot approaches. It's about strokes gained approach, and it's about metronomic ball striking. I mean, let's get this right. Hideki Matsuyama's won it in two consecutive years. Yeah. So it's got to be about ball striking, really, isn't it? Because it's not going to be about putting.
Yeah. So
one thing I will note here, and this is really anal, but, you know, it's me. These greens here were always Tiff Eagle, Bermuda grass, base, and overseeded. And they were always overseeded with a mix of Poa trivialis, which is what we see in the desert quite a lot, isn't it? Poa trivialis overseed.
Yeah.
But also velvet bent grass. Yeah, so they used to overseed those base Tiff Eagle greens with those two grasses. This year, it appears that the bent grass disappeared and it's now Poa trivialis and rye grass.
Okay.
So that puts us in the territory of PGA West, where they played the Amex 2 weeks ago. Also, Valspar Championship, where they play at Copperhead in Florida. And they also very regularly have done in the past, not all years, but a lot of years, overseeded at TPC Sawgrass.
Right, yeah.
But that taking away of bent grass, because you and I have always said, Hideki Matsuyama on Bermuda grass is a match made in hell.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of, they're Bermuda grass greens in Phoenix. They're not. They were Bermuda grass base greens that were overseeded with Poa trivialis and bent grass.
Remember, you've always said to me that they play far more like bent grass, or have in the past played far more like bent grass.
I don't think they will this year, though. They're taking that velvet bent grass, all right. I think they're going to become a lot more grainy and Bermuda grass-like.
Right.
Which works for a couple of my tips, actually. Because if you're looking for a fantastically positive Bermuda grass player, there aren't many better in this field than our Korean friend Sung Jae-im. So Im's straight in for me, because I think this test will suit him far more now without the bent grass on the overseed.
Yeah.
Saying that, he just finished second. It's funny, isn't it? He finished second, didn't he, at the Masters? And there was this conjecture about there was Bermuda grass coming through on the bent, you know, the underlay was coming through onto the actual putting surfaces at that particular 2020 Masters.
Yeah,
because
of the time of the year.
Yeah, the crazy time of the year, and the Bermuda was coming through on the overseeded bent grass. And guess what? Im finished second. He finished fifth at Kapalua. He's just so Bermuda grass positive. It's frightening. So anyway, Sung Jae-im's in for me on that basis. So, yes, that's quite a detailed change. So it'd just be interesting to see if we see different names. The other things here, you know me, I do like historic odds. Simpson, 14-1. He would have been friendless last year at 14-1, I reckon. Fowler at 22-1. I mean, Ricky Fowler at 22-1 won this. Woodland at 50s. Woodland was outside the world's top 50 at that stage in 2018.
Yeah.
Matsuyama 11-1. Matsuyama 28-1 when he won the first time around. I was on him that week. And Brooks Koepka 40-1. Now, that, bearing in mind, that was before Koepka had become really a full PGA Tour member.
Yeah, yeah.
The 2014, he'd actually won the Turkish Airlines Open on the European Tour, and this was his first PGA Tour outing of 2015.
Yeah, that's right. Because he spent an awful lot of time, didn't he, up to that point over on the European Tour. And
was it two whole seasons on the Euro Tour?
Yeah. And it kind of broke through at that level before
coming over here and
breaking through here, yeah.
Exactly. If you average out 40, 28, 11, 50, 22 and 14-1 over 6 years, you're looking at 25-1 winner of this. And that, to me, is what we're likely to get again. I think you're going to get one of these elite guys just coming and taking it at a relatively short price.
Yeah, potentially.
Last week, of course, at Torrey Pines, I think the average was 60-1.
Yeah, rings a bell.
And yeah, none of the short 13-2, 8-1 guys won. It was a 25-1 Patrick Reed. So which was too short for me, but, you know, 25-1 in the grand schemes of things wasn't a bad winning price. I just think one of the elites is going to take this. Strokes gain numbers, if you're looking for the last five winners. So Simpson down to Matsuyama, his first win. Strokes gained off the tee, averaging it out across the five winners. Strokes gained off the tee, 11th. Strokes gained on approach, 5th. Strokes gained around the green, 30th. Strokes gained tee to green, 5th. Strokes gained putting, wait for it, 21st. I don't think it's going to be a putting competition. It's all, to me, about straight total driving and who's got the best approach play of the week.
The formula seems to be quite consistent here, doesn't it? It doesn't deviate a great deal, so I like your logic.
As does the scoring. What they tend to do here is, I've put a new section in my previews, lead score progressing, and I'm seeing here 13 under and 13 under leading after 2 days. And then by the end of the actual tournament, 17 under won it.
Yeah.
They seem to leave pins accessible, bit of moisture on the greens, and it just, the course firms up constantly, firms up throughout. And by the end of the week, you've got greens that are releasing. Especially on, I always think, the 17th. And I always remember Ricky Fowler that year. He won driving it through to 17th green into the water.
Yeah. You can go through the back if you really catch it, can't you? Some of the guys are taking 3-wood into that, even though it's a drivable par 4. So just doing it on the safe side. Or the water all the way down the left side as well, isn't there, when you get close to the green?
So I expected, they've got complete control of this. There'll be no wind, there's no rain in the forecast. So if it's nothing around 17, 18 under, I'll be amazed. That's just where the tournament organisers want it. You've got to get your shooting boots on. You've got to get yourself into a position come the end of Friday where you're up in the top 5, top 10, and push on from there. I do think that players who have got, I have put it on the predictor model this week as well. Just have a little look on the predictor model of players over the last 5 years that have done well on firm golf courses. Because over the weekend, I do think this course will firm up. There will be release on the greens, and a lot of players do not like that. Okay, that's where I'm at. We've talked about the average odds. We've talked about key skills, strokes gained approach being the obvious one. I'll take you, all I've done effectively, I have peppered my 8-week rolling numbers for people that are doing well in terms of greens and regulation at the moment and people that are doing well in terms of strokes gained approach and strokes gained tee to green. And they're the guys I'm putting up. My top 8 strokes gained tee to green guys in the last 8 weeks. One is Rory McIlroy, who at 11-1 I think is backable this week. I would rather back him at 11-1 this week than at some ridiculous 13, 15-2 last week.
It does, yeah, as you said to me off mic, he does kind of drift down the betting a little bit before he gets that win, doesn't he? And then bang, away you go.
Yeah, I think, you know, the couple of years ago, I think it was 14 to 1. He was in a complete and utter mess. And then he won. Was it the players at 14 to 1, something like that?
Yeah, he can do
he's
it.
He's getting into a territory where he's going to win soon. And you can tell that just from his odds. The only reason he's 11 to 1 this week is clearly because he had a poor Sunday again.
Yeah.
And he's never played here. But actually, this course suits Rory McIlroy to a T. It's all about first-class approach play, which he seems to have recaptured because his greens in regulation numbers at the moment are stunning. Last week, he struggled off the tee with his accuracy. He was all over the place off the tee. That won't wash this week. So if he can straighten the driver, I think he's got a real chance. He ranks number one tee to green for me over the last 8 weeks. Two, Ricky Fowler. So I can see why people are lumping on Ricky at 50 to 1. Three, Xander Schauffele. Four, Corey Connors. Five, Justin Thomas. Then we've got a tie for sixth. Berger, John Rahm, Will Zalatoris. Nine is Chris Kirk, who's playing some beautiful stuff right now. We put the message out to him. He did so well to get his medical. And 10 is Siwoo Kim. Now, I've chosen three players within that top 10.
Yep.
One being Xander Schauffele, who, if you base it on value, you'd never pick him. But I just think he's kind of a modern day. He's a kind of modern day Matt Kuchar, isn't he? You just know he's going to win. You know he's going to be at an awful price and he'll just win. This golf course is made for Xander. And coming off the fact that he actually finished second last week at his home tournament, where he's always under-delivered in the past, and he finished with two rounds three and four, that were in the top 10 best scores of the day, he's going to come here with momentum, Xander. You look at his record, it doesn't look super great. Yeah, I think he's had He's had a 17th, a 10th, and he's had a 16th in his three visits in consecutive years. He always plays here.
There's no disaster there, is there?
No, but two of those, he was fifth going into Sunday.
Yeah.
He's just had a bad Sunday. For me, yeah, I can see him winning this week. His numbers are just all over the chart. And yeah, I hate the price. Everyone hates the price, but 11 to 1. He's my pick of the top guys. It would be him, or it would be McIlroy over JT or John Rahm. Rahm, he just disappeared. He went backwards again, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Sunday.
Yeah, it was an odd one. From the position he was in, you expected him to really push through and make a charge, but yeah, it just didn't happen, did it? Xander's got to, the number of close, near finishes that he's had over the last couple of years. Wow. I mean, you clearly can't count that Tour Championship effort as a genuine win, but he was the best player out there on the week. But other than that, the number of runner-up finishes he's had for, was it the century of the last one he won a couple of years back?
2019 Century Tournament of Champions. Then you get all this narrative, this absolute BS narrative that he only wins no-cut events. It's like, for Lord's sake. So he can't win an event with a cut, apparently, even though his first win was with a cut. But you talk about Eastlake. Simpson, couple of fourth-place finishes at Eastlake. Fowler, couple of top eights. Gary Woodland, couple of top tens. Matsuyama's had a fifth and a fourth there. Brooks Koepka's had some decent finishes there, fourth and a sixth. So there's a link to Eastlake, I'll give the, for sure. But you look at, you just think Simpson, Fowler, Woodland, Matsuyama, Koepka, it's just got US Open all over it. Simpson, US Open champion. Woodland, US Open champion. Koepka, two-time US Open champion. Matsuyama and Fowler have both finished runner-up at different US Opens. Well, you look at Xander, his record at the US Open is exemplary. Is it top fives and six the last four years?
Yeah. He's been hyper consistent, hasn't he?
That says to me an all-round ball striker that can actually scramble and putt, does well at a US Open. And yeah, so for me, Xander. So I've picked Xander at the top. 3 points each way, 11 to 1. I've got with William Hill. I've always told you about Sung Jae-in. I love the fact that these greens, I think, are going to be grainier and more Bermuda-like. He's perfect for this. He finished seventh here as a tour rookie on his debut. Love him. And then I've gone for Corey Connors. His numbers are just out of... They're just unbelievable. If this guy could half putt, he'd be more dangerous than Sergio Garcia. He's crazy. Yeah. 30, these are his season-long statistics for last year, right? 13th off the tee, strokes gained. 12th for approach. 18th for tee to green. 20th for driving accuracy and 6th for greens in regulation. And in 2019, or sorry, in the 2020 section of last year's tour, he didn't finish in the top 10. That's mad for a guy that is so elite.
Yep. Yeah.
He, but he's putting 181st for strokes game putting across last season. One thing about Connors, though, is he does seem to have better weeks putting on Bermuda grass.
Yeah, yeah. I was just, while you were talking, I was just looking through to try and find, because there was something just ringing at the back of my head that he had had a particularly positive putting week in the recent past. That Zozo Championship, I think, by the looks of it.
Yeah, he putted nicely there. The putting isn't as bad. I think over the season, he's ranking just about positive. He's 104th in strokes gained putting.
Yeah.
But those ball striking numbers are continuing. He's 15th for ball striking and 6th for greens in regulation so far this season.
Yeah. Yeah. When you've got a ball striker that good, it's just relative, isn't it? They don't need to be putting at, you know, an average in old money of 1.5, 1.6.
No.
They're hitting so many greens, they can. It's just taking advantage of.
Give me a week where he's point where he's putting at 0.7 positive on the strokes gained,
yeah,
and he's going to be right in the mix.
Yeah.
Because you just look at his greens in regulation numbers; they're outstanding. In my 8 week trackers, he's top 10 for greens in regulation. Yeah, he's in the top 4 for strokes gained approach. He's in the top 5 for strokes gained tee to green. And he's also in the top 10 for strokes gained total last 8 weeks. And he's at 70-1. Sign me up. Simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a player there that's at far better odds than his current form. This guy finished 10th at the most recent Masters in November. So that was his first ever major top 10. And you just dig into it. That win that he had down at the Valero Texas Open, guess what? It was on Bermuda grass base greens that featured bent grass and poet trivialis overseed.
Yeah.
So I think he likes the greens as well. And actually, second at the Sanderson Farms at 17 under. His win was at 20 under. As you mentioned, Sherwood Country Club in October, where he was putted brilliantly for him. He was minus 18 for that week. Finished in the top 10 in an elite short field event. I think he's trending, mate. Another one of these players just outside the world's top 50 as well. Big, big breakthrough this week. Gets him into the WGC.
Yeah, big carrot dangling in front of him.
Big, huge carrot, mate. It isn't that kind of carrot where you're literally playing your last tournament at the RSM Classic at the end of the year or Mayakoba and it's kind of, it's arriving on your doormat. It's not staring you in the face and that could lead to pressure. But you just know that if you keep playing well enough, you're going to get yourself into some big tournaments. Clearly, he's already in the Masters. He finished top 10. So that is Xander, Sungjae and Corey. And I was going to send you the preview at that point and say, yeah, job done. I was only going to tip up three. And then the whole process of this, I was constantly telling myself that I couldn't put a player in my preview for just any reason I could find. And in the end, I just sat there and said, well, you found 13 reasons not to put him in your preview. Why don't you just actually put him in your preview? And it's Will Zalatoris. This guy is exceptional, isn't he? Absolutely.
Big prospect, yeah.
What a player. And he reminds me of that Brooks Koepka narrative in 2014. A player that you haven't really heard of on the PGA Tour, but clearly is something made of different, it's different gravy. He's Korn Ferry this year. He won TPC last year, TPC Colorado at altitude, clearly Colorado. He won that at 15 under. And in that Korn Ferry season, he had 6 top fives and a further 3 top tens. So 1 win, 6 top fives, 3 top tens in the Korn Ferry promotion tour, yeah? That's crazy. Not that he was officially promoted, but you get my gist. And then he hits the PGA Tour and he goes and finishes sixth in the US Open. Well, we just talked about the US Open narrative. Yeah. Eighth at Corrales, fifth at TPC Summerlin. I love that. Shriners Open, finished fifth at altitude in Las Vegas. Yeah, thin air. This kind of target golf, 18 under. Yeah, love it. And then last week, he just popped up. First outing of 2021, because he's now handpicking where he wants to play. He's got special temporary membership. He's not in the FedEx Cup, but he can have whatever sponsor invite he wants to whatever tournament, as long as it's not Invitational or WGC or Major. What's he do? Another top 10 finish at Torrey Pines, where they're playing the 2021 US Open. He's just he's different gravy, this Alatoris. He's a very good player. And what's he about? Brilliant approach play. He's not a great putter, but he's... It's all about superb approach play with Zalatoris. I think he's going to love this golf course. So Zalatoris, we've got Connors, Sung Jae Im and Xander Schauffele. Who have you got?
Very good. Yeah, I have put Xander in my each-way double with Victor Hovland at the top end.
Paul.
So
He's going to finish. They'll both finish second.
Well, yeah, the each way element would be nice, but yeah, to get them both over the line would be even better. But yeah, let's put the headline guys at in the top and an each way double. So I've done that. The only other one I've backed is much further down the list, and that's Sam Ryder at 250-1. Now, I know you've got previous with Sam, so you probably won't agree, but I think there's a little bit to like about him. You go back to his Korn Ferry days, he won by 8 shots at the Pinnacle Bank Championship, which is impressive. Came onto the PGA Tour proper in 2018. He was 5th in Houston, 2nd at the John Deere, 7th in Barbasol, 4th at the Safeway, 3rd at the Shriners, some of those events that you just mentioned, actually. Mm-hmm. Nothing in 2019, but then he started to shine a little bit again last year, 3rd at Puerto Rico, 7th at the Workday Charity Open. Most recent form, though, 47th at the Amex, where his greens and regulation looked really good, 2nd for greens and regulation, 8th for total driving, 10th last week at the Farmers, 4th for greens and regulation. Most importantly, though, 1st for strokes gained approach, 5th for strokes gained tee to green. So he's picking a lot up with his long game at the moment.
Yeah.
And just want. Following the kind of the narrative that you've just described, that fits in very nicely with the kind of identikit that you need to be showing to do well around this track, I think. A couple of starts here in the past where he's done nothing major, but he has been handy enough at halfway on both times. But 250 is quite happy to take a stab at him this week.
Did I not mention Carlos Ortiz for last week?
Yeah.
And he was in the final group, and I know he had a nosebleed and completely capitulated. Do you know there's one player in my... There's one player that really jumped out to me in these strokes gain numbers. He sits currently tied for 12th strokes gain total, current form. So last 8 weeks, he's sitting there with the likes of Sam Burns and Brendan Todd. He's 200-1 this week. Bo Hoag. And his tee to green numbers are just... I'm just trying to see where he makes his hay. He's in the top 12 for strokes gained putting. It seems to be more short game, but Bo Hoag, 200-1. He's playing some great stuff. And I can see he's being backed because there's plenty of short prices on Bo Hoag. One that could just pop up. Clearly playing some nice stuff.
Yeah, potential. So, as you say, there's a few bookies cutting him right now. So either he's been tipped up or there's a few people on the same kind of a wavelength as you there, Steve.
Or he's been tipped up and people know he's been tipped up. So they're quickly cutting his... all good. I enjoyed this week's show. I'm hoping for an actual victory. The first one since August. I keep chipping away, covering the weeks. Someone at some stage is going to land. And the same is exactly the same for you, Paul.
It's just those Sundays, haven't you? You just need one of them to go your way and away you go. And then you have two or three on the trot and it will all be rosy.
Enjoyed the pod, enjoyed the process. You haven't got a tournament next week. We have got AT Pebble Beach. I won't say pro-am because I doubt if it's going to be one. We've got Pebble Beach, which is just an absolute SHIT show when it comes to betting. It's either 16 to 1 or 500 to 1. So we'll see what way the coin falls this year at Pebble Beach. I'm sure Paul Casey will be going off for something like 14 to 1 if he plays.
Yeah. Ted Potter Jr. type.
Did you notice he played well last week, Ted Potter? Was it top 20? Yeah. At Torrey Pines, 7,700 yards. You're having a laugh, aren't you?
And he's coming up to Pebble Beach next week.
Interesting. Right, thanks for your time, Paul. Much appreciated.
Yeah, best of luck.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to listeners. Again, we'll be back next week for Pebble Beach on the PGA Tour. Thanks for your support. Give us 5-star reviews. And goodbye.